Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Music Business Podcast presented by Hypebot.com. I'm your host, Alex May, and today on the show, I'll be talking with James Shotwell, the social media coordinator of Holix. Holix is a website that helps artists in the promotional distribution of their music by allowing artists to upload their music and share it securely. On this episode, we're going to talk about how this helps music creators in the digital music age. Make sure to subscribe to the Music Business Podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app, and keep up with our newest episodes on SoundCloud. If you enjoy the show, please consider submitting a review and spreading the word. Now we've got James Shotwell on the line. James, would you mind giving us a brief introduction and tell us what your role is at Holix?
Yes, my name is James Shotwell, and I'm the marketing coordinator for Holix. My job basically is to spread the word about what we do. I run a blog for the company where we do a lot of educational posting. I make college appearances, and I generally kind of serve as a contact between ourselves and our clients just to make sure everything's going well. So a little bit of customer service as well.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, I like it.
Well, it certainly sounds like you stay pretty active.
Yes, definitely. We're pretty busy. We're a small team. There's only three of us, so we each take on a lot of roles.
Oh, okay. Can you give us a quick summary of what Holix does for those who aren't familiar with the service?
Yes. Holix, in short, is the premier digital distribution platform for record labels and independent artists around the world who are looking to promote new and unreleased music. Now, a lot of digital distribution platforms, when you say that term, people think of like iTunes or Amazon, and those are definitely correct, but that's not what we do. We kind of work on the other end of the music industry, the promotional pre-release side. So when a record label or a musician wants to get attention for a new album, whether it be for a review or maybe they're looking for a record deal, they use Holix to share their music securely and privately so that it cannot or hopefully will not leak.
Now, I would hazard to guess that most of the general music listening public isn't really aware of what a leak is and how it can affect artists, just how drastic that can be. Can you give us a quick rundown on what leaking music all entails and what stage of the distribution model leaking generally occurs?
Yeah, well, it's changed over the years. I mean, I assume most people are familiar with things like Napster and like the golden age of music piracy and peer-to-peer networks and, the basic idea of downloading music from the internet. That's been around for a long time. And I think the biggest issue that we've faced is that in the last decade, as streaming services like Spotify and Pandora kind of became the focus of the music industry's digital efforts, the idea of battling piracy and the impact of piracy kind of had to take a back seat. But what we at Holix have learned during our time existence is that it's as big a problem as it ever was, and there are people who are working very hard to eradicate it. Now, basically, a leak is any release of music that wasn't intended by the artist or the record label. So if it's a single or it's the full album, whatever the case, if it comes out before the scheduled release date, that's considered a leak. What we do at Holix is we watermark materials and we do a lot of efforts to try to prevent leaks from happening in the first place. And then if something does happen, we also have tools in place to help try to eradicate the files so that they do not proliferate online.
I was kind of poking around on the site, and it looks like through that watermarking, it's just done kind of through a metadata embedded in the song files. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's a company out of Germany called Fraunhofer. They invented the MP3 format, actually, and they've also invented watermarking technology. And we've worked with them to kind of come up with our unique way to do it. And what happens is when someone uploads a file into our servers, it's injected with a unique identifying watermark. And then whenever somebody, when they send that file out to the member of the press, like let's say I sent something to you at Hypebot, when you access that file, it's embedded with all of your contact information basically in a non-audible watermark within the folder that cannot be erased. So you can't duplicate the file and get rid of that content. It's always with the file. So if it does happen to get out into the world, we're able to track back and figure out who originally accessed the material.
So it's kind of like the metadata that's used, I guess, in Shazam and like SoundHound, kind of the apps that you would use to, like, if you hear a song on the radio or playing in a store and just want to hear what it is. But this is more of just an approach to use that for, I guess, fighting piracy, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting way to compare it. They are kind of similar. Those apps work in similar ways. What ours does is completely back end. There's really hopefully never a need to use the watermarking information. That's the kind of thing that only comes up in the case where you have to figure out how did this file get out into the world, where did it originate from. So hopefully our watermark exists as a failsafe to hopefully not ever have to be accessed.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, it is awfully similar.
Now, who are some popular artists that have had leaks recently over the past few years, and how exactly has it affected their album sales?
Well, see, that's the thing is almost every artist suffers from album leaks at some point along the line. It wasn't until we just started this global release date that kind of started to change, because what's been happening for the longest time, back when it was physical, it happened at CD factories. So, you know, just wherever somebody would have their CD duplicated, people would be working in those factories and they'd see unreleased music come down the line. Someone would shove a copy into their pocket, go home and upload it to the internet, and the album would leak. In more recent ages, when, you know, physical product has kind of died down and digital has taken its place, in the digital age, how that's happened more often than not is that people share unreleased music online through unsafe methods like a MediaFire or even like Dropbox sometimes, or the international release dates cause an album to leak. So like here in the United States, the album might come out on Tuesday the 3rd, but in New Zealand it might come out 2 weeks before that. And so the album would come out in New Zealand, someone would download it there, and then it would proliferate online so that people in America were downloading it before it was even available on shelves. So the impact's kind of hard to measure. But in terms of like a big artist who's kind of gotten a lot of headlines for a leak, in December, Madonna had her new album Rebel Heart was actually leaked before it was even announced to the public, which was kind of a huge deal. And just last week, the man who did it was actually sentenced to 14 months in prison.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the punishment for leaks is actually kind of getting a little bit more intense, because for a long time, the biggest problem that we've encountered, and a lot of record labels encounter this as well, is that, you know, copyright theft has always been against the law. But in the digital age, it's something that has been increasingly hard to prosecute. So we're kind of trying to find ways to do that. Watermarks help us to do that. But any lawsuit is an expensive process. So people have been a little hesitant to really take a stance against a lot of pirates. But Madonna really put the fist down, so to say. And we'd be lying if we said we didn't hope more people follow that in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting to bring that up. I mean, that I think to a lot of people that would seem like a pretty long sentence for that, but justified, obviously, in like you mentioned, the copyright law. But I think especially more in the digital age now, it's the lines between copyright infringement and just, oh, I'm going to share this with my friend, are definitely becoming a little more blurred. And I don't think a lot of people realize exactly the implications that you can have when you leak an album or share this song or that song. And people a lot of times compare it to just like, oh, it's no different than me sharing a CD with a friend or something, but they don't really realize how much damage it can ultimately do to the artist in that sense, especially leaking it early and kind of ruining what could have been thought out as a whole promotional material package that they're going to be released over the next few weeks before the album comes out.
Yeah, well, I think there's a part of it where a lot of music consumers don't necessarily consider the bigger picture. Like, you hear the first song off a band's new album, like, let's say 2 months before it comes out, and then everyone wants that album. But if that album were to leak the following week, and sometimes that does happen, you know, there's a whole team of people who have been hired to put together a marketing plan, and the label has their whole schedule of how they want things to roll out. There are premieres set in place. There's a whole system that is set up for how albums kind of roll out. And at Holix, we try to make it so that people can go about their business and do those marketing plans as scheduled. But when a leak happens, it throws a wrench in that entire process. And unfortunately, even though leaks have been very prevalent in the music industry for over a decade now, most labels and publicity firms are not really in a position to ever handle a leak. There's no good way to have your music hit the internet 6 weeks early and then scramble to get it out to the general public. You can't just flip the switch and everything is fixed. And that, oh, it's frustrating in that matter. And I think you're right. There's a lot of people that don't understand how far reaching the impact can be, because what we encounter a lot of Holix when it comes to leaks, unfortunately, is that somebody shares an album with someone they think is their friend, and maybe they are really good friends and that person only listens to the album, but then that person has a friend who wants to hear the record. And now the record moves one far down the line. If you remember how I mentioned watermarks earlier. Let's say that third party downloads the album or even just rips it. They use their computer to record the file. The watermark will still link to the person who was originally sent that file. So if, you know, the third party leaks it, when we track it, it's going to come back to the person who originally got that album in the mail. And that's the person that we're going to go after. So, you know, even if it's not your fault, if you start the chain of events, it's going to come back to you.
I think a lot of the people who share a leak aren't really sure of like all of the legal ramifications that can follow that. What typically happens to those who leak an album before its scheduled release date? I mean, you mentioned the prison sentence for the guy that leaked the Madonna record, is that more on the kind of lower or higher end of the sentencing or whatever it would be for the consequences on leaking an album like that?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I always tell people that it's kind of a case-by-case basis, and a lot of it is based on, you know, what the label or the band impacted is able to do, unfortunately. There isn't a precedent set where every copy – you can just, you know, have someone arrested for leaking your album, and then there's something set in place. You know, if you're an unsigned band who maybe has a lot of hype on the internet or in general and has a big album coming out and it leaks early, if you don't have, you know, the money to go after somebody, you might just be out of luck, which is unfortunately a hard truth, and it's something that I wish that I had a better answer for you, but unfortunately the harsh reality is that a lot of these artists, there isn't a way to kind of fight back initially without a service like Holix. And what we can do at Holix, we can't help you with the money factor, but we have tools in place. Like, let's say an album leaks online, and what immediately happens, somebody uploads it to like a Mediafire or a Zippy Share or something like that, and then that link starts to spread across the internet and people download it, and then they post new links with new downloading sites. We have a service that we call Automated Takedowns, which actually crawls across the web and searches for the watermarked files through all the downloads and automatically issues RIA takedown requests for you. And it does that for the life of your time with Holix. So we have, our service can issue hundreds or even thousands of takedown requests a day based on how, you know, how much your link is out there in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very efficient. Yeah, I've seen those around online, you know, RIA takedowns, DMCA takedowns, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Now, how quickly does this happen when there is a takedown? What all does that entail in terms of, you know, submitting a request to the internet host and having them take that down, resubmit it to you or anything like that? What's that whole process like?
Well, there is no uniform way, unfortunately. It's kind of, the internet's kind of the Wild West in that way. You know what I mean? There are some sites and services, like if someone's running their blog through Tumblr and Tumblr gets kicked with a bunch of takedown requests, Tumblr's pretty good about removing the file from their service. But if it's somebody who's just running maybe their own WordPress account or something like that, the DMC, the takedown request might end up in their inbox, and then it's kind of on them to take it down. And it's, you know, do they want to be the good guy or the bad guy? And there's two sides to that coin. I mean, on the good side, you know, it'd be nice if they would just take down the link and the artist could go about their regular marketing plan. But the truth of the matter is, by having that illegal file on their site, they're probably generating a good amount of traffic that's helping boost their potential click-throughs on ads, and they're benefiting from having that illegal file on their site. So it's up to them to take it down. Now, the people who issued the takedown request could pursue them with legal action, but again, it's a matter of finances and what they, you know, can actually make happen.
Right.
So it's kind of catch-22. I had a news website for many years that was on Spin Media, and whenever they would get a takedown request, they would basically remove it for us. So like a major news outlet, that's typically what happens. Like the editors or whoever's in control doesn't want to deal with the, you know, even the threat of a lawsuit, so they just immediately act. But there are a lot of young bloggers and young music writers in the world who don't necessarily fear the man quite that way, for lack of a better phrase. You know what I mean? They're like, how are they ever going to find me? How are they ever going to do something to me? And they just let the links live. And that's kind of, unfortunately, the case.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things I've noticed just now with more of these social media websites popping up, is a lot of people will just think, oh, I'm going to share a song from my favorite band or like a B-side or something that hasn't technically been released yet. And, you know, you read these articles about people that have leaked albums and done this and that, or, you know, shared Chinese Democracy before it was supposed to come out, and get in trouble for it. But a lot of it, I think, is just kind of this blissful ignorance where people think, oh, that's not going to happen to me. I'm just sharing it to a few people on my Twitter account or posting a link on my Tumblr. You know, it's not this big production on CNN. But I mean, ultimately, it does link back to the artist in a negative way on that, and kind of impacts their publication that they're going to be really promoting the record in the next few weeks or months or whenever the release date is planned.
Yeah, and I mean, there are a lot of people who will argue, you know, I download more albums than I would ever be able to buy. And I think that that's a fair argument. And to some degree, there are people who might download or access leaked music who would never actually buy that music. And I mean, that can be written off, but there's a good number of people who will buy that, who will get interested in that music and will want to support the artist in future tour dates or something like that. And they won't be able to, because artists do still rely on album sales. Like, there seems to be this myth a lot of times that we encounter through Holics when I talk to college students, where they're like, I would rather buy an album from an artist in person or buy concert tickets to see an artist live, because they think that money goes to them more than album sales go to them. Like, you know, there's somebody in the middle who's taking all of their album money.
Yeah.
And while there is, while there are more hands in the pot than just the artist, the hard truth is that every album that ends up leaking, for the most part, ends up with lower album sales than were projected before, prior to the leak. And so there is a good group of people who get the album and then they never buy it. Or maybe they download it and they like it and they never buy it, but they stream it on Spotify, but it's still a lower return than if they had just bought the record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like you mentioned earlier, there's no set precedent for a lot of these things. And with streaming music services now and that kind of that whole digital model of publication, there's not a lot of, I guess, transparency, maybe the right word is, where it's just like, you know, a lot of these people have these ideas that if I buy a CD, if I go down to my local like retailer store, if I go to a Best Buy or order it off of Amazon, somehow it's not going to return as much to the artist as if I bought it at one of their live shows, or if I bought a concert ticket and then went and bought something at their merch table, came back home with the t-shirt. So there's a lot of this weird kind of gray area in between where I think a lot of listeners nowadays aren't really sure how to really support their artists in the best way possible. And a lot of that, I think, comes down to sharing music throughout these sites and, again, not realizing the implications of what that can do on the actual artist end of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's we just live in a point where music is so liquid that it can be hard to remember that there is a value attached to it, I think. You know, yeah. You know, especially for young artists, and those are the ones biggest, mostly impacted by leaks, because, you know, the only really way to build a strong brand for your unknown band is in the online world today. And so you get all this hype online, and then as the record hits, all the people who are just hype about your album are going to download the leak because they're part of that internet culture. They want to access it. They don't even mean you any harm. They're excited and they want to hear the music. But we know from 15 plus years of dealing with digital piracy that it does not always convert to sales like people want to think that will happen.
Right. Yeah, it is kind of an interesting phenomenon between the two. I've had several instances where I've pre-ordered an album or something and it'll leak a week or two earlier. And it's again, one of those things where it's like, well, I want to hear the music as soon as I can. But again, I think it kind of takes away from that initial impact of actually physically opening up a CD or vinyl record, or even just, you know, downloading it off of iTunes and kind of being in that moment where it's, nowadays, it's a global release date for the most part, where you can kind of share in this release that this band just put out and worked on for however many years and finally release that out to the public.
Yeah, and there's a whole conversation and community aspect to it too. When an album leaks, you can't really have that good discussion. Like when Kendrick Lamar just dropped his latest record out of the blue, like everyone in music was able to just drop everything and we just talked about Kendrick Lamar for a day because we all got it at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what makes music so special, is like the communal aspect of it, where we all see it in a different way. We're all listening to it in our own place, but it still brings us together. And when a leak happens, artists are never able to hit that kind of communal point that they would if the album just made it to the public on their own terms. Like, that's why that first single is such a big deal, because when the first single hits, everyone in the world hits it at the same time, and then we all talk about it. But if the album then leaks, that never happens again. Then it's like, oh, did you hear that the record's out there? Or, you know, everything gets kind of scattered.
Yeah, it definitely takes away a lot of the inertia of that buildup towards
exactly.
The release. Well, another thing I saw about Holics was that it offers a really cool page where you can upload your music. Obviously, you can share it to different press contacts or things like that, but it's not just uploading a zip file of a few waves or MP3s and essentially emailing that to people. It's actually making a whole back-end website, and you have pretty much an artist page that looks almost similar to like a Bandcamp kind of layout, which I thought was really cool in getting a link for that and pulling it up and almost seeing like you have this unique little website that's been kind of tailored to you, that you can listen to the music before anybody else. And I just thought that was really cool.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's like one of the things that we're most proud about at Holics, is that we like to think that every client is able to make their own experience out of what's happening. So if you're listening to the new album from your favorite band and you pull up the page, it looks like the website of your favorite band. You know, they can add a background and they can add colors and photos and all that jazz. And actually, we've actually had a few unsigned artists who have used – the Holics that customization tool to make an EPK out of their album page. So like I sent you a copy of the album, you know what that page looks like. So they did the same exact thing, but they added all of like their bio and their contact information, and they actually used it to secure a management deal and a record deal. We ran a whole feature on our blog about it. I can't remember what their name is off the top of my head. They're a metal band from the UK, but we've been seeing more and more artists do that because they have that fully customizable page, and they know that everything on that page is secure. So it's kind of nice to have the, you know, the peace of mind, as well as feel like your vision is still coming across the way you intended it, as opposed to like a Dropbox link where it would just be like a blank page that said download here.
Right. Yeah, I think a lot of that's more beneficial to the listener as well. Just, I mean, you're going to obviously hear the music the same way, whether it's just one file up on there or whether it's in a playlist on a really cool looking website. But having it on the website that you guys have, it definitely sounds, it sounds and looks like a more cohesive kind of put together artist page on there that definitely looks like a professional way to kind of send that out towards different people and track who all's listening to it.
Yeah, exactly. That's our hope, is that people will make it their own. We want everyone to kind of feel like their Holics page represents their artist or themselves, however they want it to be projected to the viewer. Because, I mean, so much about engaging with music online is more than just hearing the file. It's about the whole wraparound, you know? That's like my biggest problem with YouTube. If someone wants to stream a song on YouTube, that's fine. But when you're on the YouTube page, you only have like this one box that's this video that's like your branding. And then everything else is like there's YouTube, there's ads, there's an ad, there's other videos you can look at. There's a lot of distractions. When you have a Holics page for your content, everything that people are looking at is yours.
Yeah, exactly.
There's some value in that.
I also noticed that you can see on that website just all the subscribers that you've sent it out to, who's accessing the music, and track the progress of it more being shared. And I think that could really allow users to get a rough idea of the buzz that the album is generating before it's actually being released.
Yeah, we're able to follow who's engaging with everything that we send out. You can see when they're streaming it. And we're working on a relaunch that's going to come out, a new version of the platform that'll come out in October this year, that's going to offer even more in-depth analytics on all this stuff. But it does work in real time right now. So if I were to send you a record and you started to listen to it, I could follow along on my end. And then I could email you after the fact and be like, hey, Alex, I saw that you checked out the new Sledding with Tigers album and that you listened to this song 3 or 4 times. Would you maybe be interested in premiering this? Or do you want to do an interview with a guy? So it does help people kind of better understand how to use their time when it comes to engaging with the press.
Yeah. And I also saw on there's different permissions that I noticed that the users could set on there, and just seeing who could access what, how many times things could be played, and different kind of aspects to that degree. Can you run us through some of the other just back-end things on there that aren't immediately noticeable that are definitely fully customizable from the artist standpoint?
Oh, from the artist standpoint, yeah. You mentioned the two big ones there. You can set downloads. You don't always have to have a watermark. Some people, there's a pricing difference in watermarks. Some people choose not to have them, but you can set you can limit streams, which some people find helpful. Some people find very frustrating. The idea there being like, if I give you only 5 streams of an album, that's only 5 streams you can have, but it also discourages you from sharing the link with somebody else. Like if you know you can only listen to the new album from your favorite band 5 times, you're not going to send that link to 5 of your friends, because then you can only listen to it once.
Right.
In theory. So that's helpful. And then also you can limit downloads. So maybe you want the music critic at Variety to download your album because you want him to listen to it and everywhere he goes, because he works at Variety. And if he cares about your music that much, then let him have it. But the guy who runs, you know, unknownmusicblog.tumblr.com, maybe you don't trust as much, and that's fine too. So you just want to allow them to hear the music but not download it. And that's something you can set. And we get emails all the time from like people in the press that are like, I can't download this album, or I ran out of streams. And we don't mind that. Like, we like that, because that means things are working the way they're meant to work. And then, you know, they can always, we include a button where they can contact the press and be like, hey, I'm out of streams, or I would like a download. But we don't mind kind of being the guy who steps in and being like, oh, maybe you aren't supposed to have a download, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, we try to make it so that that happens seamlessly, and there's never like this weird, you're put into that, you know, clients are put into a position where they have to explain like, oh, you don't get a download. Like we're not afraid to be the middleman.
Yeah, it's cool that you can act as kind of that middleman or a mediator between the two, because I think a lot of people, when you would mention a service like this, they may just think, oh, they're going to limit me and I can only hear it once or so. But it's all very, it's got a very customizable workflow to it, and it's not restricting unless it really needs to be. And it sounds like that's only the case if somebody really just abuses the actual music that they've been sent.
Yeah, well, we've learned that there's no two companies that market music the same way. And, you know, we work with all genres of music and people all over the world. And there are as many different ways to want to share your album with people as you can imagine. And we try to cater to them as much as possible. And like the new site will do it even better than we do now, but we do try to pride ourselves on the fact that we make a lot of different customization options available. We want everyone to feel like their Holix is them, a reflection of themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's definitely something you don't get from, you know, just obviously uploading your album to iTunes or anything like that, where it ultimately all ends up in the same iTunes store and under your artist page or whichever albums you've released. But it's real cool to have that own, your own kind of website within a website that allows you to selectively share it within different people in the industry.
Yeah, and I mean, we have just as many customization tools for people on the journalism side. I know you didn't get to engage with that part as much, but when people like me who receive 30 or 40, you know, promos every couple of weeks, we have profile pages on Holix as well, and we make it so that members of the press can view all of their promos in one screen. They don't have to click between. Like, you know, if you get 10 or 13 invites, you might. Some services, like if you got a Dropbox link to 13 albums, you would have to click on 13 links.
Right.
But on Holix, you know, if all of your promos are on Holix, you can just view one page that has all of them, and it groups them by record labels. You can organize them by release dates, whatever you need, and it kind of helps you keep track of what you've received. You can mark things as listened to or viewed if you want to like get rid of them, and you can really keep track of what's been sent your way, what you're listening to, and what you actually want to cover. So we try to make it just as, you know, innovative for people on the journalism side of things as we do the music side of things.
And more so on the music side of things, I also noticed that when an artist can upload the music to the website here, I saw that they have the option to hibernate the account during different slow months. And I thought that was just a really interesting feature to have there, because I think that, like you mentioned, there's no specific trend for a lot of the way that music is released. So it's cool to be able to fluctuate with that in real time, depending on your needs as a consumer.
Yeah, we allow people to hibernate their accounts. You can also, some people will move up and down. You know, the summer's a big time for album releases, so sometimes people upgrade their account to have a little bit more bandwidth and space, and then when it gets to winter and they're kind of cooling off, they'll lower their accounts. And for smaller labels, I own a record label myself, and we use Holix. We sometimes go months without a new release, and during those times, it's nice to be able to hibernate and kind of keep all of our data stored on Holix, but pay only, like, I think it's like $5 or $6 a month, and you hibernate that way, and your account stays active and all of your information is still there, and you're still tracking if anyone engages in your promos, but you don't have to, you know, worry about the bill of like, oh, we don't have a new release to help pay this bill.
Right. Can you run us through the few different tiers that they have on Holix at the moment?
Yes, I can definitely do that for you. We have a bunch. Our most popular one is the Indie Powerhouse, and it runs $90 a month, but that includes your watermarking. We do a $20 a month plan that's no watermarking. All these include at least 196 megabytes of storage, 5 gigabits of bandwidth. And you have the option to add all of our security things. What we're trying to do with our new platform is add a lot more a la carte options. So if you can only afford a $20 a month plan, but you want to have watermarking on, let's say, you know, your one big release of the year that you're able to do, well, then we'll make it so that you can just have watermarking that one time. You don't have to worry about paying for a $90 account. That comes with the evolution. That's all, you know, development stuff more than anything else. But right now, those are our two lowest, and those are where I encourage, but some bigger labels, major indie labels, they might take our Ultimate Agent label, which is $1,000 a month, 20 gigabytes of storage, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited watermarking, and enhanced security. So our prices range from $20 a month to $1,000 a month. We think we can meet everybody's needs in that range.
Yeah.
and we like to work with people. You know, sometimes record labels will write us and be like, you know, we've had an Indie Powerhouse account. We don't necessarily need to move up to 174, but we need a little bit extra. Like, we'll try to find ways to make things work, and we always offer a free 30-day trial for everyone, so people can get a taste, and then if they're like, I don't know which is right for me, obviously we can chat with them and hopefully find the plan that's right for them.
Right. That's very cool.
Well, thanks.
No, if you don't mind, I just wanted to get a little bit more into your background. I was just kind of looking around at what all you've been involved in over the past few years. And notice you have quite a bit of experience in the music industry, ranging from a social media coordinator at Our Stage, editor at Alternative Press Magazine. You're the founder of Under the Gun Review, and I believe you have your own label, Antique Records. How did you get your start in the industry, and how has it led you in all these different directions?
Yeah, all those things are correct. I got my start in the industry. I'm from Southwest Michigan, a tiny town known as the Seacorn Capital of the World. And there was a local venue. When we moved to that town, there was a local venue when I was like 10 years old, and it went out of business. And when I was in high school and I started to get into music more, and I would travel to some nearby towns that had local venues, I wanted to do that. So I talked to the family who owned the property, and for whatever reason, when I was a sophomore in high school, they let me reopen this building under Wow. their guidance. And I raised the money to put on a show. Like they told me how much money it would cost to run the building for a night. It was like $300 to like keep the lights on, run the sound, do all that jazz. Mm-hmm. So we put on a show and tried to make enough money to cover the night's bills, and I agreed to pay whatever wouldn't happen. And we ended up making like $500. So it was a success. So we kept doing it, and I think throughout all of high school, and we didn't do a ton of shows. We did one every couple of weeks or months, whatever would work out. And for the most part, we always broke even. Like, we never were a giant success, but that was kind of how I got my start. And I got into writing in the whole digital world once I moved. I went to college for music industry management, Ferris State University. I did radio there. And then at some point, someone asked me if I wanted to write, and I had been thinking about going into English as my second major. So I was like, sure, I'd love to write about music. And Under the Gun came a few months after that, and it all just kind of, you know, kind of domino effect from there. Under the Gun introduced me to Alternative Press, and Alternative Press kind of got me bigger exposure, and that helped me get an interview at Our Stage. Our Stage helped me move to Boston. And Holix is the best of all. I used Holix as a journalist for several years. It launched in 2006. I've probably been using Holix since 2006. And one day I just tweeted at them, and I was like, hey, I imagine that Holix is like a big office building somewhere, like a big corporation somewhere. And I was just like, do you guys have a marketing department? Because they had a Twitter, but it wasn't really being used. So I was like, how do you promote a company like this? Like, I was really curious, because it's weird. Like, you kind of pointed out, like, we're not a public music company. Like, we work with the people who work with musicians, basically. I was like, how do you market that? And the founder, Matt Brown, reached out to me, and he was like, we actually don't have someone in that position. Why? Are you interested? And I was like, yeah. So we sent like three emails, and he offered me a trial run. So I always just tell people I got hired off Twitter, which is pretty much what happened.
Yeah.
And it's kind of surreal. I just started my third year in May.
Oh, wow.
And the label, yeah, the label's been going for 3 years. Antique Records, we're out here in Boston. We do vinyl and tapes, and we do some CDs as well, but not as many. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I do a little bit of everything. I always just tell people to not limit themselves, because I always just like to try things. Like, I tried music booking, and I liked it, and I tried writing, and I ended up liking it, and it just kind of has fortunately kept finding things I like.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things I've really noticed about just the music industry as a whole. It's not as cut and dry as I think a lot of people think in other, I guess, more conventional job areas, where it's just like, yeah, you know, I'm doing this, I went to school for this, and I ultimately ended up doing this. Whereas seems like with a lot of the more the music industry, with that, it's many people wear several different hats, and I think a lot of people can see that as just like, oh, that's weird that, you know, they're doing so many things at once. But at the end of the day, they all seem very connected towards each other. And I think it's the most successful people that can realize how those are interconnected with each other and use those different skill sets to kind of promote towards an ultimate, like, I guess, title or job title or something like that.
Yeah, there's a book on getting rich, and I forget who wrote it. There's some book about, like, so you want to become a millionaire, and it says, like, most of the millionaires in the world have seven revenues of income. And I always compare that to people in the music industry, not in a term of money, but most of the people I know in music have, like, up to seven different jobs.
Right.
And none of them are millionaires, but anyone that has that many things going on is probably full, is like what I would consider a lifer or full time. Like, that's success in the music business, unfortunately. Like, if you have that many different projects going on, you're like, oh, they must have found a way to make money in one of those things. Probably not all seven, maybe just one of six, and the other six are free, but they've cracked the code if they've gotten to that many and they're still like doing it.
Yeah. I think a lot of that too is just reliant on all of these changes in the music industry. I mean, if you had mentioned 10 years ago to people that are one of the primary methods of consumption was just going to be pulling up a program on your computer to stream pretty much any music in the world, nobody would have really guessed that or thought to get into that kind of development. So I think having those different areas of specialties in there allows you to kind of grow within the different aspects of the industry and a lot of these different subgenres of things that you wouldn't really think would really have an effect prior to their release a few years down the road or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely never thought that there was a job for me in digital watermarking and anti-piracy. That's kind of been like one of the, that, but it only exists because of what you just described. Like 10 years ago, my job wasn't a thing. Like Matt, the guy that founded Holix, actually did so because he realized that there wasn't a service like this in the world yet. So we're only a product of like a digital age that needed this kind of solution. And I think that a lot of people are finding themselves in that position. And, you know, there's always going to be a part of you that wants to work in the classic music industries. You know, not maybe not sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but like making records, going right on tour, doing that. And so, you know, like I have a label, I don't make any money from it, but it's successful enough, but that allows me to feel like I'm still embracing the quote unquote classic music industry.
Right.
But my profession is very much like modern, like it only exists in this digital age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very interesting. The progression of events on a lot of the different things in the industry is a real interesting trend to follow.
Yeah, definitely. I was mad at my phone yesterday because it was taking like 30 seconds to load the Boogie Nights soundtrack on Apple Music. And like a year ago, I would have had to buy that. Like, it's just one of those things where I was like, wow, I'm frustrated because music isn't instantly available within like 20 seconds today. Like, yeah, that's where we're at as a culture now. You're like, why isn't this stupid thing loading?
Yeah, it's all this instantaneous consumption. And yeah, it's very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Now, what are some of the things that you would like to see change in the music industry over the next few years?
My biggest thing is education. That's kind of where our heart is at Holix. Like I said, a lot of what I do is education. We have a whole company blog, holixdaily.com, where what we do, instead of just posting marketing materials or cute tweets, though I do try to keep our tweets relatively cute, we post a lot of educational material, and maybe not even like watermarking, but general stuff like music copyright law and, you know, tips for selling more merch on tours. Like education within the music industry is so incredibly important. Whether you want to work on the side of the business side of things, obviously it's important, or especially if you want to be a musician, like the more you know, the better. So my biggest thing is like, I'd really like to see more avenues for affordable education open up. Like we have a blog that's free, but obviously that doesn't replace a music industry management degree or a music business degree, mm-hmm, though we could argue whether or not those are useful. but I know a lot of people who spend a lot of money doing it, and the people who don't but end up in the music industry, while they're great music industry employees, there's always a part, like everyone I meet is like, there's so much stuff that they wish they knew, and the only way to learn it so much of the time is to go out and find out yourself, or like find somebody who's already doing it and ask them to teach you. So what I'd really like to see more than anything is channels of education opening up that are, you know, widely available to people and easy to access, so cheap or at least, or free even, something like that. Like that's really what I'm looking for the most in music.
Yeah, very cool.
I feel like we'll all be more successful if we can all, you know, understand it a little bit better, understand what we do. Cause like you and I have just spent half an hour talking about a service that I'm going to wager most of your listeners didn't even know was a thing.
Yeah,
a while ago. And I encountered that everywhere. I just spoke at a conference in April that was like all people in the music industry. And after, the people on my same panel were like, I didn't know this existed. And I was like, but you have 30 years in this business. How do you not know? And they're like, I've always wondered how we fight piracy.
Yeah.
It's you know, it's something like that where it's just like there are these questions that people have, and I don't know if they don't know where to ask them or people just aren't supplying the answers, but that's kind of what I'm most hoping to see change.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. I mean, we kind of touched on that earlier where it's just the development of the different avenues of music consumption and distribution and everything change on a daily or weekly basis now. So I think that's the main challenge currently, is just staying up to date with all of these different media formats and ways to either promote yourself or kind of get your band out there or your songs or anything, or even just kind of figure out song royalties or like the business behind things or record labels. There's just so many different avenues to create revenue streams on that and get your music heard that it's very difficult to keep current with all of them.
Yeah, and I'm no better than anybody else. Like I have lost entire days to like trying to understand one thing, or you know, right now I'm writing an advice column for bands about the need to post and control where their lyrics are online, and I've lost like I go down these huge rabbit holes of like, how does this work or how does this happen, and then I lose a whole day. And I come back to being like, I should have learned this years ago. Like, I'm almost 30, and there are still, like, basic concepts about the music business that just because I haven't encountered them myself yet, I'm foreign to me. I'm just like, I don't know how that works. And I don't know. I always feel like our business – that's how I find everyone feels. They know, yeah. they know how to do their jobs, but if they're asked to do something new, it's often a challenge. So, you know, just, you know, finding a way to make people better understand how it all works is very important to me, but it's all changing at the same time. And I appreciate the difficulty, and like, it's hard to educate people when tomorrow it may be different.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that you bring up the, publishing lyrics and everything for that. Cause that's definitely a trend I've noticed kind of, take up popularity within even the past couple months. One of my favorite bands just put out an album, and they released something like, I think it was 6 out of the 10 tracks on YouTube, about 2 weeks or so prior to the release date. And it was all just the lyric videos with that, which I thought was cool, because you not only got to hear the music before the actual release date, but kind of see the lyrics behind it too. And you almost felt like it kind of eliminated that barrier between feeling like you have to go and pirate the music to get a leak early, but just go up to YouTube and find it on their official channel. So I think that was kind of a cool aspect that's taking off more recently, is just putting up lyric videos.
Yeah, I tell the biggest piece of advice I give artists probably every single day of my life, I tell somebody, is that their biggest goal online should be to control the conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever it is, control the conversation. If your song leaks, find a way to get it out in an official way so that it, same thing with lyrics. Like, I was in my writing, I was like, if you ask most people to play their favorite song, they'll pull up Apple Music or Spotify and they can just play that song. But if you ask them to show you the lyrics to that song, they have to, you know, open a different app. They have to open their browser. They have to go to Google. They have to Google the song title and lyrics.
Right.
And then they'll pull up like Lyric 365 or something else. And that's a site that's not owned by artists, that's not paying artists, but they're generating profit off the artist's creative work. And it's hard to blame people who end up doing that, because most artists don't put their lyrics online.
Right.
And it's their creative work, and they could be controlling the conversation around their lyrics, they could be annotating their lyrics, they could be doing all these things to, you know, further their relationship with fans by also letting them learn their songs.
Right.
And so many artists don't do that. And it's also unsigned artists. Like, bands email me all the time to try to get coverage, or they want to pitch my label. And if I pull up their Bandcamp and they have a great song but no lyrics, I have no interest, because I'm like, I don't want to sign a band who can't be bothered to write down the words to their own songs.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. It's frustrating because people want access, and lyrics are like the basic thing you should be able to access.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was one of the main kind of things that happened with that, that website Rap Genius, where it allowed you to look up all the different lyrics to different songs. And now it covers multiple genres, but it was more of a kind of crowdsourced approach to lyrics, where you could all contribute towards it and kind of have conversations on what a particular line meant, or in the context of a song, what the whole theme was behind it. And it's neat to see artists kind of taking that into their own hands now, and kind of, like you said, controlling the conversation a little more accurately and being able to tailor it towards their own creative output, what they initially wanted to put out as the message for that song, rather than relying on other people to just kind of figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, Rap Genius has been nice because there's a lot of rappers who have, you know, made an account, and now they kind of go through and they add their 2 cents to a bunch of stuff. And that's like, that's a really good start. I still struggle with it, just because, I mean, at the end of the day, those artists are still commentators on a website that they aren't getting paid
right.
to run links to their music. But at the same time, the way Rap Genius, or just Genius if it's one of the other genres, the way that they deliver lyrics and the annotations and stuff, they're entertaining. Like, it's a very well-made website, and I love it, and I use their app. But there's still a part of me deep down that's like, I don't know, like, I wish that I could just go to like Eminem's website. He's somebody that I know annotates on Rap Genius. I wish I could just go to Eminem's website and read this stuff from Eminem's blog, that yeah. I, you know what I mean? And because then I'd feel like it was there was like a connection there. Like he typed all this up or copy and pasted it from another word processing app yeah. and then wrote what the song was about. And to me, that would mean so much more than like lyric365.com just telling me the words to the song.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's definitely a lot more authentic when you hear it direct from the source, and that can really translate to creating a lot better, not only respect for the music, but a lot more connections with it. When you're listening to a song, you kind of think more about what the artist actually put into that.
Exactly.
Now, do you feel like there's other certain other aspects of social media that artists aren't really using to their full potential just yet?
I don't know. I feel like it's different for every artist. You know, there are some artists that I think use Snapchat really well, and others that I think have no use to ever be on Snapchat. So it's it's always about like where your fans are,
right?
And so that's more my advice than like you need to use this network or you should use this one more or less. It's like try to figure out where your fans are. Twitter's always the easiest place to start because you can actually just search for people talking about you. Mm-hmm. But I always just tell people to ask their fans, like wherever you already have something set up, ask people what they use. And if a lot of people are like, oh, I use Snapchat every single day, then maybe you should have a Snapchat account.
Right.
But if you're a folk band from like Alabama whose audience is mainly in their 30s, you probably don't need a Snapchat account.
Right.
There's just like the biggest thing is to remember that even if you and another in a band that you feel you're similar to exist in the same genre, you can't follow their path to success.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to figure out what works for your band. And like, even if it seems different than everyone else around you, if it works for you, stick with it.
Yeah, I think it's definitely an interesting industry to kind of be in and just kind of see evolve like that on a daily basis, really.
Yeah, and I mean it's influenced by outside things. Like on the piracy note, this weekend with Comic-Con, there's all this fuss about leaked videos and stuff, and that plays into what we do at Holics, and it opens up a lot of important conversations that I think needs to have. But you're right, it's changing every day. And I mean that's why we feel it's important to try to get the word out about what we're doing, because our anti-piracy efforts are also changing every day, and we're really trying to eradicate this problem that has proliferated for so long, and the music industry has kind of gotten quiet. We've kind of become complacent, where it's just like, oh, albums leak, but that's just a thing that happens.
Yeah.
You know, like people starve. That's just a thing that happens. Like we can't become complacent.
Right.
We can't become complacent with something bad just because we haven't figured out how to stop it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I appreciate you guys giving us this opportunity for that exact reason. Like that's kind of what I spend my days doing. But every day I'm kind of hit with this curveball, like you said, where I'm just like, oh, this is a thing. Okay. Now how does this apply? How does this apply to what I do? Has this ruined my career? Like, because that's the other thing about the music business. There's so many innovations that you're like, did this company just do away with what I do?
Right.
Am I no longer important? Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah, I think it definitely comes the full circle. I mean, all the whole piracy thing, and it's interesting you brought up the Comic-Con thing right now too, with all those just the different trailers that they've been kind of showing around on there.
Well, I posted a blog today, actually, right before you called. I was just finishing drafting, and it went live while we've been talking about this whole thing, because Warner Brothers, their international marketing coordinator, she released a statement along with the Suicide Squad trailer came out yesterday, the HD version.
Right.
And that would have been fine. But the senior vice president of like international marketing released a statement with it that was basically just shaming fanboys for sharing leaked footage. And I took a lot of problems with that. We do at Holics all the time, because like our number one thing is like you can't teach people not to leak music by scolding them. Mm-hmm. Like you can't guilt them into not pirating something.
Right.
You know, and it's weird because like in that situation, you cannot want to share something publicly with a small group of fans and not assume that those fans will find a way to share that thing with other people that aren't there. That's how fandom works. Like that's why you want to show it to them in the first place. And there's a blind ignorance in assuming that like the people that you're like, these are the biggest fans of this thing. Let's show them something and then ask them to keep it to themselves.
Right.
Like it's just bad logic.
Mm-hmm. Well, that pretty much wraps up my end of the interview here. Is there anything else you'd like to add on Holics or just your own personal music experience?
Well, I appreciate you guys coming. I read Hypebot every day, and I've read Kyle's book, even though I'm talking to you, Alex, but you get to work with Kyle. Yep. I've read Kyle's book.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
awesome. I, I promote, we talk about it on the Hawks blog all the time, so I'll plug his book for him.
That's very cool.
No, I appreciate you guys bringing me on. We have a podcast too. It's called Inside Music. I'm the host of it. People can check that out. I chat with people in the music industry and artists. It's not as much kind of like what we do, where it's like, what do you do for a living? But it's more stories from the road, experiences, you know, how did you get to this place and what have you learned from those adventures? So people can check that out. It's on iTunes and everything. HolixDaily.com is our company blog. I always tell people also that Holix is spelled H-A-U-L-I-X. It's a weird word.
Yeah.
If you type it if you type it how it sounds with like C's and K's, there's a candy called Holix in other parts of the world, and we're not that. So if you get candy, that does not fight piracy.
Interesting.
Yeah, it does fight healthy teeth. Exactly. So it will, that's all that does. Other than that, yeah, we have a free 30-day trial. I'm just so happy to be on the show. I mean, I've listened so many times, and now it's like surreal to be like, oh, I'll have to skip this episode. Not because I don't want to hear myself. Well, actually, exactly because I don't want to hear myself talk. But I hope other people enjoy it. And you can find us on Twitter at Holix, or I'm at UTG James. That's UTG James. But thank you so much. This has been so much fun. Thank you.
Well, that's all for this episode of the Music Business Podcast. Thanks again to James from Holix for coming on to the show today, and thanks to Hypebot.com for helping us put this all together. Don't forget to subscribe in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, and if you enjoyed the show, please rate us highly and submit a review. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.